So in preparing for this, I was doing a little research, and I've been doing some type of college ministry for about 19 years. And so I realized that that's longer than some of the student freshmen have been alive. and so, my goal today is a lot of you are in college ministry or your church is close to a college. And so just to give you some steps, some practical steps of how you can engage those college students where you're at. So I'll just give you kind of a little bit of my story to start out. I was blessed to grow up in a church planter's home. What I tell people is that my dad was a church planter before it was cool. You know, before it was like the cool thing, before skinny jeans, you know, and things like that. But my parents, they modeled this authentic faith that led me to follow Christ at an early age. But it was as a freshman at the University of Oklahoma that my walk became more consistent. My mentor, Max Barnett, the first verse he had me memorize was 1 Corinthians 10:31. Says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. And my mindset slowly started to shift from my glory, living for myself, to trying to live for God and his glory. And I'm still in that process. But one expression of that was my twin brother. I have an identical twin brother who's also, he's actually the collegiate director of NAM. So with NAM, he's doing that. And so we got our start together. We were in the dorms, and we just realized that we're literally surrounded by non-believers. And so we started Evangelistic Bible Study. We called it The Spot, which I don't know why we thought that was cool, but it sounds more like a nightclub than a Bible study. But we knocked on doors like almost every day, and every week and every door, and we were just desperate to get the word out. We had community bathrooms, and you guys have those in the dorms, where we would put our poster on the inside of the stall so they couldn't get away from us. And also we bribed them with free pizza. Pizza's key to college ministry. And but the crazy thing was guys actually came, and some of them actually took steps towards Christ. And so it's even just when I was in college realizing that how strategic those years are when people are students. So I was kind of hooked on that. I also attended a workshop similar to this where my mentor specifically was talking about California, the need there, how one out of every seven students in America goes to school in California. Mm-hmm. And currently there's about 281 colleges and universities in California, but there's only, that I know of on-campus Baptist ministries, there's only maybe 10 or so. So there's such a huge need there. And so that was kind of seed planted in my heart back in college to maybe one day I would start a college ministry in California. So after I graduated, I joined the BCM staff for 2 years in Oklahoma, and then my dad started a church in San Diego, which just happened to be 10 minutes across the freeway from San Diego State. And so that was just, with 35,000 students, a very strategic campus, home to our claim to fame is Kawhi Leonard, if you guys know who that is. He went there. Sometimes we'd be shooting around, he'd be in the gym with us.
Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't beat him. So it was about 14 years ago, I felt the call to moving me from Oklahoma to San Diego. So I had my Nissan Pathfinder, old school one with no, there's a handout for you there, no AC. And I just poured all my belongings in the back of that, drove from Oklahoma to San Diego across the Mojave Desert. If you know, it's like 105 degrees, and so no AC. And so I was like kind of debating, okay, if I roll the windows down, it's just hot air coming in. And then I would soak my shirt in the bathroom at the gas station, and then I put it on. And then, anyway, but then it's fun. But we started a ministry. We had one faithful San Diego State student that we started with. And now she happens to be married to my younger brother, which is pretty awesome. But we started just with a simple evangelistic Bible study with free pizza. Again, noticing a theme. But over the years, it grew, and year after year, we started reaching students and discipling students and sending them out. And about 5 years ago, I felt the call to plant a multi-generational church that is targeted at college students. And so that's what I'm currently doing, Compass Church. And so right before we planted, my wife Jessica and I, we were overlooking San Diego. Any of you guys been to San Diego? Some of you have? It's a beautiful place, and it's one of the unique things about San Diego is a military town. So there's a bunch of military bases, and so as we were looking, there was this military base right in front of our faces, and we just had this thought, like, what if our church was like a spiritual military base that reached people for Christ, trained people up, and sent people out year after year. And so that's kind of the heart behind why we planted with the campus in mind, and that we wanted campus and young adults in mind. And so our goal is not just to reach the San Diego State area, but to plant other churches that can be kind of spiritual sending bases on strategic university areas, communities. And so my hope today is that maybe you're on campus, some of you are BCM, some of you, you're doing kind of multiple roles, that you would pray about how you can engage the college campus that's near you. Because I believe that with the right mentality and strategy and leadership, that your church, no matter how big or how small, you can reach college students. You can do that. And so the first step to engaging this is to see the opportunity. That's the first blank on your outline, is to see the opportunity. And, you know, you chose this workshop, so you probably believe it's important. But let me give you seven reasons why I believe that college ministry, college students, are the most strategic demographic on the planet. And I'm not partial or anything, but but like a true preacher, I made an acrostic too. So here it goes. So first, the C is crossroads. They're at a crossroads. They're making the major decisions in their life. Jeremiah 6:16 says, "Thus says the Lord, stand by the roads and look. Ask for the ancient paths where the good way is, and walk in it, and find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it." And so college students, they are at this crossroads, making major decisions in all areas of life. And if there's no one there to encourage them to slow down and look around, they're going to miss the ancient path. They're going to miss the path that real rest, where real rest lies. The most obvious of this is the first week on campus. Some of us call it welcome week, where everyone just storms in. I remember one of the first years at San Diego State, we were in a fast food restaurant, and there was two 18-year-old girls. It was kind of a party night, and they just went into the bathroom, and they were just throwing up. And we had this thought that the reality is that there is a race to the hearts of these freshmen. That if we don't get there first, then someone else is getting them. And the friends they make in those first couple weeks, the first few days, can impact their entire lives, the trajectory of their life. Proverbs 13:20, probably a lot of you have memorized that one. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. So if they fall in with fools, their lives can be ruined. But if they make a few wise friends, it can make all the difference for them, avoiding a lifetime of regret. What we tell them a lot is when you choose your friends, you choose your future. And so it's not just the friends you choose, though, but they're also choosing their major, which ends up being their job. They're choosing a lot of times their spouse. Some of them find their spouse. And what I often tell people is, like, your spouse frames your life. Is it either, depending on who you marry, it expands your opportunities or limits your opportunities. And if we can catch them at this crossroads and convince them to slow down and look long enough, maybe we can convince them to go on the narrow road and follow Jesus. So it may sound blunt, but one reason I love working with college students is they haven't had enough time to totally ruin their lives yet. Yeah. of course, no one is irredeemable, but if we can catch people early, it's much better to learn from other people's mistakes than to make them all your own. So all these decisions they're making, the most important one, though, is what they believe about God. And so that's the next one, is they're open. They're open. They're evaluating faith. I think people are most open to the gospel at two times, is trouble and transition. And so that freshman year especially, they're in this time of transition, and they're forced to figure out what they really believe. And so maybe you also do youth ministry. They come in, and they're at this point where they're asking, will I really make my parents' faith my own or not? What am I really going to believe? At the same time, professors and upperclassmen love them and have a wonderful plan for their life as well. They want them to deconstruct their faith. They want them to be dragged away. And I found that even those who don't have much faith background, they can also be open to exploring as well, because there's just a time where they're learning ideas. For example, my dad was a long time ago, he was in college, and he was given the Four Spiritual Laws booklet. Someone gave him that booklet and he took it back to his dorm. He read it several times, and that night he gave his life to Christ. And now, all these years later, God's used him to plant eight churches, he's trained over 5,000 church planters in 30 countries. And more important than that, like all four of us, all four of his sons are now in ministry. And so what we often say is that when you reach a student, you don't just change their life, but you have potential to change family trees.
Yeah.
And so I think, actually, I told some of you guys, I got to go to the birthplace and boyhood home of Lincoln. Yesterday I was at the boyhood home, and there's this river that goes through, and there's a story that Lincoln fell in, and one of his friends like helped rescue him from the raging river. And I just think, like, what if that friend, you know, I know God's providence and all that works, but, you know, that friend, because that guy pulled Abraham Lincoln out, the difference that was made in the world. So we can use that as an analogy on campus. If, like, we can pull one student out, it has potential to change their whole family, but then there's some people that end up changing a nation or a generation. And so that leads to the next point, which is leaders. Like, college students are leaders. They're of today and tomorrow. Like for example, my story was I was given a really solid foundation growing up, but it was in college. I needed some mentors to help smooth out the rough edges, and I'm still working on those. But college was kind of this key time where I was equipped for a lifetime of leading. A lot of my verses that I use in ministry today are the ones that I memorized when I was in college. A lot of the books, a lot of the Bible study that I did, it was in college that I built that foundation. So, also think about this. If you don't find leaders in college, like future church planters and pastors, where are you going to find them? Where are we going to get people that are potential seminary people? Like, you're going to find them in college. And so, it's not just future ministry leaders that we need. We need Christian politicians. We need Christian educators, Christian medical people, Christian entertainers and artists and video game makers. And we need all types of people. And so virtually every person who significantly impacts the culture comes first through the college campus. It's like the bottleneck. And so that's why Bill Bryant, he said, if we win the campus today, we'll win the world tomorrow. And he said, Charles Malik, the UN, former UN secretary, said, the university is a clear-cut fulcrum with which to move the world. And so unfortunately, though, other than a few solid Christian universities, the majority of universities have been overrun by anti-biblical ideologies. And so if we're not on campus fighting for the souls of students, then who is?
Yeah.
So students are not just leaders of tomorrow. Students are also leaders today. Like college students, they can be active in your youth ministry. They can be leading other students. There's so many ways that students can be leaders right now. The next is that they're learners. The cement is still wet. Students are students, and their minds are much more moldable. They're in this learning mode. They simply have more time to develop the habits that they form while they're in college largely will serve them the rest of their lives. And so one of my goals for when we reach students is to not just teach them what to think, but how to think. So that you've heard that phrase, like, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. You teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And so that's what we're doing, is we're trying to create lifelong learners and followers of Jesus. The next is they're energetic. They infuse life into the church. Let's be honest, though, they don't bring a lot of money into the church. But what they bring can't be bought. You can't buy energy. You can't manufacture energy. Students and young adults are some of the best servants in our church, and they're a lot of fun. I just think it's kind of boring if you don't have any young people around. People start worrying about like someone sitting in their seat and things like that. Anyway, global. And then the next thing is they're global. They're global. They can go anywhere. Students, they already have this longing for adventure. Most of them don't have mortgages or kids, so they're able to go for a summer, or they're able to go for a couple of years. It's rare that I meet a long-term missionary who has never been on a short-term trip. So short-term trips make long-term missionaries. So it's not to mention there's over 1 million international students on our campuses in the U.S. today, and many of them are in less-reached areas, areas that are almost impossible for an American to go. And they can be sent back to be ambassadors for Christ in their people group. And then the final is they're essential. It's a strategic battlefield. The Battle of Gettysburg was the decisive point of the Civil War. And I believe that the college campus is our Gettysburg. It's our decisive battle point. It's our decisive point. And unfortunately, many churches are largely ignoring it. Culturally, we're already seeing the results of when we lose our college campus, when we lose, and you can see that drift. A few months back, I was offered a job at a larger church, but it wasn't close to a major university. I was praying about what to do, and God used Psalm 78 to guide me. It says, "We will not hide from them. We will not hide them from their children, but tell to the coming generation the glorious deeds of our Lord, and His might, and the wonders that He has done." So I was convinced that I needed to focus the rest of my life investing in the next generation. And so if we don't tell the next generation, who will? And so one day I have three boys. I have a 6-year-old Samuel, a 3-year-old Joshua, and a 1-year-old Nathan. And so I was holding Nathan, and I was just rocking him on my front porch swing, and just one of those great dad moments. And I just had this thought that every college student is someone's Nathan. Someone who, you know, their dad, you know, was rocking them, and someone that God deeply loves. So I wonder if you went to a University of Kentucky basketball game with the blue and white, and Jesus, if he attended that, and he looked out on that crowd, what would he see? I think Matthew 9 gives us the idea. It says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. I believe that Christ's heart breaks for the college campus. The question is, does your heart break for those students? It describes the sheep as harassed and helpless. Have you ever put yourself in a lost sheep's hooves? Have you ever thought about what a lost sheep would feel like? They're doomed to wander aimlessly, overwhelmed by fear, knowing at any moment a wolf is going to come and kill them. Similarly, non-believing college students, they're harassed by anxiety and depression and all sorts of enemies, temptations, pornography. They're helpless against the enemy's attacks. The Greek word helpless is actually, it's interesting, it's to throw with considerable force. One thing that happens to sheep if they're not sheared regularly is they grow excess wool and they end up toppling over. They're thrown down and they're just like, they're helpless for predators to come get them. So lost people are helpless to save themselves. And they do not know how to be saved. So we have to tell them. We have to rescue them. So what's Christ's solution? We've all been at prayer meetings where everyone goes around the circle, shares their prayer request. You know, Aunt Sally's hurt toe. But what would Jesus' prayer request be, according to this verse? More laborers. Mm-hmm. If Jesus was in a prayer circle and we were taking requests, he'd be like, his prayer request, he's asking us to pray and plead for more laborers, for more harvesters, for more workers. Because here's the reality, that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So the first step to engaging the campus is to pray regularly, passionately, beg God for more workers on your campus.
Yeah.
Ask God to send more workers to your campus. And so the other question is, the reality is, a lot of us really don't believe. I think we don't believe what Jesus said. He said the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. I think most of us, we honestly believe the opposite. We believe that there's a lot of churches, there's a lot of ministries, but college is hard. It's a hard place. There's not a lot of people that are interested. We believe that the laborers are plentiful, but the harvest is few. But here's the truth. The problem is not the lack of harvest. The problem is the lack of harvesters. The problem is not the lack of harvest. The problem is the lack of laborers. A lot of you Kentucky people, some of you actually might be farmers or grew up on a farm. I don't have to tell you that the harvest time is all hands on deck. We all got to be all in. And if we don't bring in the harvest, it's going to literally die on the vine. Mm-hmm. Similarly, right now there is a plentiful harvest on the American college campus. And that window, it might be shrinking if things go online and things like change in our culture. But right now, it's still, I think, one of the best places to reach the lost. And so in John 4, it says this, "Do not say, 'There are yet 4 months.'" This is what Jesus said. "Then comes the harvest. Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the harvest, that the fields are white for harvest. Already the one who reaps is receiving wages and gathering fruit for eternal life, so that sower and reaper may rejoice together. For here the saying holds true, 'One sows and another reaps.' I sent you to reap that for which you did not labor. Others have labored, and you have entered into that labor." There's three imperatives in this passage. The first is to look. That's to behold is another term for that. It's Jesus would often use this to say, "Listen up. What I'm about to say is really important." And then he said, "Lift up your eyes." This is to open your eyes. It means to direct your attention, to focus your attention closely. And then he says to see. It's the idea of looking continually and attentively. So basically it's like, I don't want you to miss this. Get this. If you get nothing else, the harvest is already ready. The harvest is ripe. There are people already on your college campus who God has already been, through his sovereignty, preparing. He's been preparing people to meet you right now. And so the phrase, "one sows, another reaps," is, I think, a universal principle. So similar to how the prophets, which Jesus is referring to, the prophets paved the way for Christ's preaching in that moment, many students have also been spiritually prepared by Christian parents, by youth pastors, by, like I was, like by my parents, other believers who have shared bits and pieces of the gospel, but there has never been someone who sat across the table and actually ask that question, "Would you like to receive Christ right now?" There's so many people that there's a bunch of little seeds that have been planted in their heart, but haven't had that opportunity to really, truly give their whole hearts to Jesus. So the idea is the harvest is just sitting there waiting to be harvested, but there's not enough people to harvest it. It's true that a lot of our ministry is seed sowing. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a great thing, but I think we need to shift our mentality to, how can we be more like reapers also? How can we also reap the harvest? My dad teaches that there's two major types of evangelism. First is cultivative evangelism. So this is a slow seed sowing process in individuals' lives. Say your friends, your family, your neighbors, the people you're stuck with. You know, you got over time, the people that you work with, you got to cultivate that relationship and slowly, like, live Matthew 5:16, be a light among them and always be prepared to give an answer to the reason and the hope that you have. And, you know, be wise at the way you act towards outsiders. All these things are cultivating that relationship. We all believers need to be doing this. But then there's also another type of evangelism called discovery evangelism. So the idea is you're sowing the gospel broadly and you're throwing the seed all over. Like in the parable of the soils, he spreads the seed indiscriminately. It just goes everywhere. It goes on the field, it goes on the path, it goes all over. I believe that college ministry is a especially unique place to do discovery evangelism. You're looking for those who God has already prepared. So one of our primary things that we pray before we go out on campus is, God, lead us to the people who are ripe. Lead us to the people who God has been preparing in advance. Anytime you go on a mission trip, you're always thinking, like, we're not here to just come in, like, we're here to partner with what God has already been doing at whatever location. And so we kind of see it as a divine Easter egg hunt. We're trying to find the people that God has already prepared. We had a mission team from University of Florida come out this week, and in 1 week, they got 200 contacts of students. And then they had two people that, you know, indicated decisions to receive Christ. So I just think the campus is kind of one of the few places in our culture that it's still somewhat culturally accepted to do this kind of evangelism. So many people of the same stage, the same age, the same problems, the same questions. I almost think of it like fishing in a stocked pond. Have any of you guys done that? It's a lot of fun. You can just catch a lot of fish. So the reason I spend so much time building the case for college ministry, because if you're not properly motivated, then you won't make it a priority. And so it's kind of halftime. I'd like you to just turn to your neighbor, turn to one person here, and just tell them, from this list, what do you feel like is the most inspiring to you of why doing college ministry? So go ahead and just turn to your neighbor, maybe twos or threes. Just share, like, what's the number one thing, the most inspiring thing for you?
I can help you with the First thing for me that sticks out is energetic. Because, I mean, just think about my church. We could use this. We could use some energy. And it's not even, that's not even necessarily like energy for changing things, but just energy for getting out there and pursuing, sending out the gospel.
Yeah, I was thinking that one too. Kind of like the same thing, like the church I'm attending right now. Like, they have a good amount of college students, but like, we're still working on the like bridging the gap between like the much older generation and all these new college students. Especially because like they're only been there like a couple of years, a lot of us. But the other one also kind of like is global, just the fact that they can go anywhere. They have like a lot of opportunities, and like so many want to go abroad like during their college years anyways, so it's kind of like, what a cool opportunity to be like, hey, you already want to go to another country, hear me out, what if you did it but with purpose, you know?
I think the two for me were Crossroads and Open. I feel like people are more open when they are at Crossroads, and so like, even for me, like, I came into college, I'd grown up in church, but I had the decision when I got into college, like, okay, am I going to make my faith my own, or is it just going to be, like, something that was in my childhood that my parents taught me? And so I chose to dive all in, and then here we are doing college ministry later. So just out of, you know, I've seen that be really important, kind of, like, because they're, like, for lots of different reasons, a lot is changing when you're in college. And so you kind of have the decision of, you know, who am I going to be and what am I going to be about? And so knowing, like, that time is so important to catch them while they're making decisions and planning for life and stuff like that. Yeah, crazy. Yeah, the Lord definitely 180'd my life in college.
So where are you two from?
NKU, BCM.
Yeah,
gotcha. Okay.
You can grab a handout.
Cool.
Hey, Josh.
Just chuck it out of the way.
We're talking about, we got these crossroads here.
Okay.
Which one of these sticks out to you as being, I guess, the most inspirational for why we do college ministry?
Yeah, everyone has a plan. Especially our enemy. All right, guys. We'll go ahead and do the next step. So we'll get you caught up. You can get the place.
Yeah.
But the second thing, once you see the opportunity, is there's a few vital, I think, mentality shifts that especially pastors need to make. I think some of you guys are already on board with these. But asking the question, why is it that most churches don't invest heavily in reaching the campus? Have you thought about that? I think it comes down to what we really value. We can say we value something, but unless we have skin in the game, we don't really value it. John Maxwell, he says, when you find your why, you will find a way. And I think that's true. So in order to really prioritize college ministry, we must make a few kind of mental shifts. The first one is from budget-driven to mission-driven. The most obvious reason churches don't prioritize students is because they don't give much. One pastor tells the story of a student giving a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit in the offering place. And with a note that says, silver and gold I have not, but what I have, I give to you. But yeah, and here's another thing I think is convicting. How many churches have a youth ministry, but not a college ministry? And I think one of the main reasons for that is because parents tithe. That's one of the main reasons. Again, what students lack in money, though, college students, that they make up in passion. So I want to get practical for a moment. I realize that most churches do not have the money to pay a full-time college minister or college missionary. So I want to invite you to consider having people raise support. They can be on staff with your ministry. They can be missionaries through your church, but they can raise support through NAM. NAM has a funding mechanism for that. They can raise money through NAM. They can be on staff with your church, and it doesn't come out of your direct budget as much. And also, you can give them, but I do recommend, if you do that, then give them some budget to work with. Don't just be like, oh, go reach the campus and don't. like, at least give them money for some Little Caesars, you know? And so it gives a lot can happen with that. But again, the next thing, the next shift is not just the budget-driven one to mission-driven, but also from short-term thinking to long-term thinking. It takes time to gain momentum in college ministry. So at first, it might not seem like you're getting that much back from your investment. But over time, if you reach a student and they stick around, they get married, they have kids, you're going to grow the next generation of leaders in your church. Because I think that one of the reasons a lot of people don't, so it kind of relates to this next thing, is shift from building your castle to building God's kingdom. I think, again, it's hard to build a really huge church if everyone leaves every 4 years. because if all you look at is attendance, it might not make sense to target students. But if you consider how your influence might multiply, it starts to make more sense. John 12:24 says this. Jesus said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." So this is, the first is talking about Christ and how he died, and his death made a multiplication effect. But the principle applies universally that we must die to multiply. In order for something to multiply, something else must die. The seed has to die and cease being a seed in order for the plant to come alive and multiply. So I think too many of us were so focused on building bigger castles that we forget about building the bigger kingdom. We forget about building God's kingdom. And this is true that many students will graduate and leave. But what if instead of seeing that as a barrier to addition, what if you saw that as a mechanism for multiplication? I think that's what we need to see. We need to see people leaving by default, be like, oh, they've got all these people leaving. Why don't we see them as people that we're sending? We're sending them out intentionally. We're training them up. Wherever God sends them, they can be ambassadors for Christ. They can be faithful disciples. And so it's interesting that some of the most effective multiplying churches also have a very thriving college ministry. I wonder why. I think there's a reason for that. So they also shift from partnership to participation. So it's good to partner with parachurch ministries however you can. BCM people, they really appreciate that. But just don't assume just because there's 50 to 100 people at the BCM that they got the whole campus covered. There's still thousands and thousands of students that are not connected to any ministry at all. And so it's like, but one thing I would say is, like, if you do have a BCM or a parachurch ministry that's really good on your campus, then partner with them, give to them. Don't just give through the cooperative program, give through your church. And don't just give money, but give time. Give some of your students resources and invest. The more that you can invest, the more likely that those students will see your ministry as one of the key partners that they have and come to your church. And this might be a good strategy for your church, just to find a really good campus ministry and, like, really get behind it. But I also want to challenge you to consider something else, and this is the third step, would be to start an evangelistic ministry yourself, maybe through your church, or maybe even if you are doing BCM, those of you who are doing BCM, maybe think about starting a kind of a ministry, of a sub-ministry of your ministry. We kind of, one way to look at campus is, some people think of it like a pancake. You spread the syrup on and it spreads all over the pancake. But other people think of it more like a waffle, where you have to pour it into the different pockets of people on campus. There's the athletes, there's the Greeks, there's the art majors, there's different things. And a lot of them don't really always overlap. And so if we can start like a targeted ministry to a specific kind of pocket of people on campus, that's another opportunity. But even the most reached secular campus still has thousands of students still that need to hear the gospel. So having your own campus ministry through your church can be a really strategic, like a direct pipeline, a kind of leadership pipeline that can go from campus to your church to the world. So this is the first, five things that in order to do that. So the first step would be to discover the right leader. The most important thing that you need is the right leader. It could be you. If you're a pastor, it could be you, but if you're like me, a lot of times you're tied up with all your other responsibilities. So preaching every week and significant, to give enough time that it really warrants. So I want to challenge you to pray for another qualified laborer to come alongside you and to work with you. Again, consider support raising as an option here. Maybe my associate pastor's main role is leading our college ministry. And so that's the priority that we try to put on it. But you give someone the role of college pastor. Also, though, one thing is make sure to give them the time and freedom and resources that they need to invest heavily on the campus. I think one of the things that pastors are notorious for with college pastors is you're the college pastor, but then you're also the youth minister, you're also the kids minister, you're also the janitor, you know, like all the different things. And so you just, college minister gets like kind of not, and so I would almost say that see the college ministry as like a missionary. Like this is a missionary. They need the time to really be on campus and really be investing, and make that the priority of giving them a little more space. And so, not that they can't do other roles as well, but you just want to make sure of that. And so, I think also when you're looking for someone to be that leader, I would look kind of like I was thinking about planting a church. That's how I would approach it. Like a church planter is a catalytic person, someone who has the ability to recruit others. And actually, I think college ministry is a great training ground for future church planters as well. So defining the right leader. The second is to develop the right team. I started with one, like I said, my first ministry started with one solid student. We started Compass Church. We handpicked three students from a past ministry to help us plant. And so just ask yourself, do I have a few young adults or students that could help me to launch my ministry? It doesn't have to be someone from that campus. It could be just someone that could pass for that, you know? But my brother Paul, he started his ministry at Chico State with a couple high school seniors. And so it's not the ideal, but he did it. And so just don't underestimate who God could use. And if God could use people, they don't have to necessarily only be from that campus. But here's the key. I'd rather have less of the right people than more of the wrong people. That's what Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great, he says, get the right people on the right seats of the bus. So that's the key. So get the right leader, the right team, and then do strategic outreach. This is where it gets practical. The first step that I would recommend, if you're not a club, become a student club. Become a student organization. This gives access to rooms, allows you to do fun events on campus. You can do information tables on campus. It gives you some credibility as you're there. But even if you're not an official student club, you can, most campuses, you can walk onto campus and you can meet students. And so this is the way we do it, is we do something called the 30-second survey with our phone. And so we use Google Forms, where you can actually do like a survey just straight through from your phone. It goes straight to Google Sheets as well, that you get their contact info. So we ask people three questions. So we say, hey, we're going around, we're asking people, we're doing just a 30-second survey. Would you be able to help us out? And then we say, what is most important for you to experience in college? Success, friends, fun, or fulfillment? So just ask that, they choose one. And the second question we would say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is the spiritual area of your life? So most people will say 6 or 7. Okay, that's cool. Well, and then the third question is, hey, Compass is a Christian-based group on campus. We do a lot of fun events. We do Bible studies. We're a church, so we're a church. Would you be interested in hearing about more things we have going on, stuff that we have going on? And then if they say yes, then we'll, here, take my phone, and they'll fill it out. They'll put their phone number in, and then we got their contact info. And then we try to invite personally. We personally text every person who gives us their contact info. So it's like we say, it's all about the contacts. We try to get as many contacts as we can, and then we invite them to whatever our next event is. We'll invite them to that personally. And then, but also, in addition to that, we do something called gospel appointments. So we try to set up a personal time to share one-on-one or two-on-one with that person. And if so, we'll say something like, on the text, we'll say something like, oh yeah, it was great meeting you, you know, the other day. Would you like to meet up? We can tell you more about what our group is all about. Can we get lunch or coffee and tell you more? And what is our group all about? Your group should all be all about the gospel. That's what it should be about. It's about the gospel. And so sharing the gospel. And so when we're at that meeting, we try to share the three-story method. That you hear their story, you share your story, and then you share God's story. So that's a three-story method. So as you're sitting there and having coffee, and then you ask them if they'd be if they've ever given their life to Christ, if they'd like to give their life to Christ. And so if you want more information about gospel appointments, we actually created a website, my brother and I, it's called gospelappointments.com. And it walks through, there's some like training videos and more things of how you can actually do those. Gospel. Have some of you guys tried them? Tried doing gospel appointments? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's like the main people that we've seen come to Christ have been in those one-on-one intentional meetings. Another thing I mentioned before was an info table. If you can do an info table, it's really great because again, you're finding the people who are already interested. And one of the things, the keys for that is we like to do a raffle. So we'll raffle off Amazon gift card or whatever the latest thing that Apple is making, you know, like AirPods or something like that. We'll raffle that off and you get their contact info through that. They can check a box that says, I'm interested in hearing about the ministry. And then you can text them also. That's just another way to get their info. And you know, again, I've started, a lot of my ministries have been started through evangelistic Bible studies. So going through the Gospel of John, or you can do a TED Talk type thing, 10 minutes of talking, 10 minutes of discussion. Again, free food is always key. But whatever you do, make sure that when you do your meetings, that it is with a non-believer, they can feel like they can come into your meeting and they can understand what's going on. So over time, as you reach more and more believers, you will shift, the target of your ministry will shift more towards equipping believers. But what you want to do is you want to create the abilities for an outsider to come in and they're not totally lost. They at least understand what's going on. And so if your ministry is currently, if that's not the case, then you may need to start something else for non-believers for them to be able to stick to your ministry. And then also I recommend having fun. I know it sounds like rocket science, but if you're doing a lot of fun events, like it's key, like kind of good, clean fun. Like students are drawn to that. You're just doing different other crazy things. Like we did something called ice walking, if you guys heard of that, where you get a big chunk of ice and you go down a hill and it's really fun. But anyway, just, you know, find creative ways to just have fun.
Ice chunking? When you say get ice what?
Ice blocking. It's like you get a big chunk of ice and you go down the hill. It's pretty fun, yeah.
Sitting on it.
Yeah, sit on it.
Yeah. Call it sledding.
Sledding. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we don't have that in San Diego. Yeah.
We put the snow and ice on the ground.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. We got to do what we can. So, yeah, I think just, you know, finding different events, different ways to connect. Like, and especially for the non-believers, maybe they'll be around and they're like, okay, you guys aren't, like, all totally weird that I can hang out with you. And then they'll come to church or then they'll come to the college group. And so kind of easing them into it. So having different touch points is really helpful.
How many times a week, like when you're doing the mission trip, kind of the campus kind of outreach, how many times a week, like your staff, how many events are they doing in like a 1 week period at the beginning? It's a race
good
to the
question.
Heart.
Yeah, at the beginning, it's as many as you can.
So
as
is it one a night? Is it 4 a week?
I'd something like that. It would be, in that range.
Four to seven.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Okay. I would say would be ideal. I mean, we don't always do that many, but it's just what you can pull off. And one thing that we try to do is we try to do some that are low prep.
Yeah.
So let's just all meet at one place and get a coffee. We're all going to get ice cream. And so that's no prep for our staff. And then some events that are bigger events, like we'll do a barbecue or a bonfire or something like that. There's more work for the leaders. But yeah, I would say you could even flip-flop it. Like do one low prep one, one high prep one, and then you can, that way you don't just kill yourself just doing events, because that's the other thing. Like if you do so many events, then your staff won't feel like, oh, I don't have any time to do gospel appointments.
Right.
And so that's the other challenge. You know. So, okay, any other questions about like just practical outreach? We've done other surveys. This is a 30-second survey we've done, but we've also done other surveys that were more targeted at evangelism. Like where we'll ask questions like, you know, if you died tonight and God asked you, why should I let you into heaven, what would you say? And we'll ask those kind of questions to get into more spiritual conversations. So we'll do that too. But what we found is with a 30-second survey, it's more the goal is to get the contact. And then over time, we're getting to share with them as they come to different events. But the other one is great for training believers to share their faith. So I think both are good methods. But as far as getting people connected, we found that the 30-second one is a little bit a little bit more effective at getting like the contact info and stuff like that. So if that makes sense.
Is the Google Sheet, is that something that you can send us, or I guess?
Yeah, I think so. I think I could send you a sample of that. If you can get your number.
Okay.
And it's also, you can find it on campusministry.org.
Yeah.
30-second survey.
Yeah.
But you have to search.
But it's a Google form that I guess I'm going
to. Yeah, you just have to, you know, get someone that knows how to make them. Yeah, they're not too hard to make.
Yeah, we've done them before, but I didn't
know. Yeah, and then the thing I like about it is, goes straight to the spreadsheet,
yeah,
so you don't have to have someone enter the spreadsheet, and then you can make a little box like, all right, we texted this person, and you can keep track of who you invited, who you didn't invite.
Yeah, that's the magic right there.
Yeah.
Accurate information, yeah.
Yeah, it saves so much time, because we used to do it like kind of the old school way, right?
Yeah.
We do the paper ones,
and,
you know, you never know, the paper's going to get lost. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think in this generation, too, it's like almost weird to have paper. It's like, why do you have paper? You know, it's just normal to have it on the phone.
Yeah.
All right, and then the next one is, you know, disciple students intentionally, and like we've just found that the more personal it can be, the more powerful. And so if you've done a gospel appointment, the great thing is you just be like, hey, same time next week, let's meet up, and we'll tell you how to walk with Jesus. And we've already seen, like at Compass, now we have upperclassmen that are leading discipleship groups of underclassmen, and so that's one of the cool things about college is, it doesn't take that long before someone can start investing in someone under them. Because, you know, even in normal life, if someone's a year older, you know, like, oh, you're way much more old, you know, wiser. But a sophomore is like way ahead of a freshman. So they can disciple a freshman, mm-hmm. and nothing weird about that. And so it's a great place for people to get experience discipling others when they're in college. And then the final thing is don't give up. It is hard. There's been nights where I've had an event and like hardly anyone come. And it's a grind sometimes. But Galatians 6:9 has been encouraging to me. Let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. And so one story is John's son. He came to some of our first events that we ever did at Compass. And he was kind of, you know, just really pretty flaky. And then he kind of ghosted us for a long time, about 6 months or a year or so. We didn't even hear from him. And then God convicted him, he came back. Long story short, he ended up getting baptized with Compass. And then now he's not a student anymore, but he was working on campus, and there was another one of his coworkers, Diego. He invited Diego to church. And Diego came to church. I didn't know that John had invited him, so I did the gospel appointment thing. I was just like, hey, you want to meet up for coffee and tell you more about the church? And so at the gospel appointment, Diego prayed to receive Christ. And then I was like, oh, John, that's how you found out. Okay, so John is the one that is following up with him. He has been doing a five-week, well, we have something called the Follow Jesus course. It's going over the wheel illustration. And so he's going through that. And then this Saturday, we had a beach baptism, and John baptized Diego. Well, and so
amen.
I think that's just the example of the spiritual multiplication that can happen. And it took a long time for that to happen. And John's one of those people that, again, you know, a small seed now can turn into a multiplying thing. So even if you just reach one student like that, even there's one John, it'll all be worth it. So I just want to end with 1 Corinthians 15:58, and then after I read this verse, I'll pray, and then I'd love to just answer whatever questions that you might have. So therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord, your labor is not in vain. That's great. God, I thank you that our labor is not in vain. And when we invest in students, we don't always see the results right away, but in your time, if we don't give up, we will reap a harvest. And I do pray for the people that we are, maybe some of the people are already investing in people that, but it's hard to see the fruit right now. I pray that they would have faith and not give up. And I pray that you'd give us creativity, and that we really would be convinced that it's worth it. It's worth the sacrifices that we need to make to reach these students. In Jesus' name, amen. So, what questions? Yeah.
Why multi-generational? Is that a theological or is that a strategic decision?
Yeah. For me, it's a little bit of both. Like I would say my preference is the multi-generational, specifically because of the Titus verses, where it talks about older men teaching younger men and older women teaching younger women. So those are that's the main paradigm that as far as theologically that I prefer the multi-generational as far as the church. I think it's BCM and having an on-campus ministry, that's great to just have that really laser focus. So we gotta have both. And within our church, we have both. We have a on-campus ministry and we have a multi-generational church. And so, but then I also think just practically what I'm saying is like to have a sending base that needs to have, it's almost like there needs to be a base. There needs to be like some pillars of people who can give, who can be like, families that can hold up and bring stability to the ministry, and some elders, some wisdom, some, does that make sense of how, so specifically for a church, I think, if you're gonna call it a church, in my opinion, it's healthy to have multi-gen. And sometimes you can start with just students. I think that's also, if you just start with mostly younger people, what's going to happen? They're going to grow up. Yeah. And hopefully you don't have a model where, oh, you can't be a part of our church anymore. If you're calling it a church, like at least they need to be, you need to be open to anyone who comes.
I think so. I hear a lot of pushback about collegiate churches.
Uh-huh.
But, it's more mature, not older, right? Really, the time isn't older investing in younger. It's more mature. Because you can have an older person who's not as mature in faith.
Yeah,
you don't want them.
So I think there's some flexibility there. Yeah, how do you define older?
Theological.
But it's just more my, that's where I lean. I feel like it's a little.
And I appreciate
it's
that.
Just there's some wisdom,
yeah,
I think,
it's more wisdom,
that you have.
But
having
you
older
have
and younger.
To.
Yeah. So that's
because then if you have a church of just senior adults, is that not
multi-generational?
So is that not biblical?
Yeah,
they
you're
don't
wanting
have
that.
People in this.
Like it's kind of like you gotta go with who God gives you.
Yeah.
Be faithful with who God gives you. But if you have like a kind of like the ideal of what you would like your church to be, that's kind of where I land.